Good morning, Your Honors. My name is John Lynn. I represent the relator in this case. This is an age discrimination case brought under the Missouri Human Rights Act. Mr. Hewitt was the equipment manager for the St. Louis Rams, a football team. After 40 years of employment, he was fired by the then head coach of the St. Louis Rams, who he alleges made a number of age bias statements to him, including the statement, "You're too old for your job." And after he was fired, Mr. Hewitt was replaced by someone who was substantially younger than he was. Now, the trial judge, the respondent in this case, granted the Rams' motion to compel arbitration. And the question before this court is whether a writ of mandamus should issue to reverse that decision on the ground that the arbitration agreement is invalid and unenforceable, and allow Mr. Hewitt to have his day in court rather than in arbitration on his claim of age discrimination. Now, we've made quite a few challenges to the arbitration agreement in this case. I'd like to at least focus on the three challenges that we think are most important so we understand what those are. The first argument is that the arbitration agreement, alleged agreement, designates the NFL commissioner as the arbitrator. And our position on that is clear. He is not neutral. He is not disinterested. He is biased, or potentially biased, because of his connections with the St. Louis Rams. He's a paid representative of the Rams and the other team owners.
Does he sit on every arbitration in the NFL? Couldn't he delegate that responsibility?
Well, he could delegate that responsibility, or the contract could provide for an outside arbitrator, which in fact is the case for a lot of the disputes between the players and the NFL.
So he sits on the players' arbitrations also?
The situation with the players is complicated, Judge, because there's a collective bargaining agreement, unlike Mr. Hewitt, where there's no collective bargaining agreement. There are some claims the commissioner might decide, for example, with respect to discipline of football players. Other claims, like breach of contract claims, are decided by what's called a system arbitrator, an outside arbitrator. So if you look at the collective bargaining agreement, it's several hundred pages long, Judge. I don't fully understand when the commissioner sits in on these cases and when he doesn't. But at least with respect to somebody like Mr. Hewitt, it's...
You allege potential bias because of the nature of the position that he holds as commissioner and comparable commissioners of the basketball and baseball and so forth would be in comparable positions, I presume. And is there any case that has found actual bias as opposed to potential bias of this or another commissioner?
Especially in a pre-award situation?
Or even a post-award, did they actually find bias ever? You're saying it's so inherent there must be bias, but no case has been cited that I can see where bias was actually found, so why is the potential for bias so great that he shouldn't be permitted to sit, as opposed to doing what a lot of the federal cases do and look at it afterwards to see if there in fact was bias? And so far as I can tell from your brief, it's never been found that there actually was
bias. There have been cases that in the pre-award context disqualify the NFL commissioner. And you never get to the post-award phase.
But there's also cases that say where it's a question of potential bias, you look at afterwards to see how the arbitration was conducted to determine whether there was actual bias. Tell me, I can see where someone has previously been found to be actually biased, that might not be adequate, but in the absence of any prior finding of actual bias, why would you upfront say that automatically, basically, the commissioner has such a potential for bias that we can't be, he couldn't fairly listen to a case?
Well, it's several questions. First of all, the term actual bias is used in the Rams brief, but they never define exactly what it means. And there are cases in the post-award situation where they don't look for actual bias, okay, Judge? They don't look for actual bias in the sense that the arbitrator, by some word or deed during the course of the arbitration, manifested some bias. They don't require that. Overwhelming majority of cases do not require actual bias in the post-award phase. So it's not true that you have to have some manifestation of bias. And in fact, you know, the commissioner's a smart man. These arbitrators are smart people. They're not going to manifest any bias during the course of the arbitration proceeding.
Is there a comparable situation? The commissioner is not an employer. And we have a prior case where we said employer or an industry representative, by the nature of their job, could not be an independent arbiter. But opposing counsel argues that this is different, that this commissioner, similar positions, are more independent while they're hired by the clubs as a whole. They arbitrate all these different disputes. They're not individually hired or fired by any particular, like the Rams in particular, and they stand in a different position. Can you specifically address that, the distinction or lack of distinction between the commissioner and our prior case and other cases in which an employer was involved?
Well, I don't think this case is distinguishable from the case I think you're referring to, is State X Rel Vincent versus Snyder.
Right.
And that was a case involving a trade association. And the NFL is a trade association. It's composed of a group of members, just like the Home Builders Association was composed of a group of members. And what this court said in that case was that you can't have somebody who is in charge of that trade association deciding disputes between, you know, an outsider and one of the members of that trade
association. Doesn't the commissioner also represent the players and employees and so forth?
Absolutely not, Judge. I mean, if you look at the NFL Constitution and bylaws, they say what the commissioner's powers and duties are. If you look at Article 2, in Article 8 in conjunction, they describe the commissioner as the CEO of their organization, and his job is to promote the welfare of the team owners. It doesn't say his job is to promote the welfare of the employees. That's not his job. He's loyal to the owners. And in fact, if you look at Article 8 of the Constitution, you'll see several important points that show that he is seriously biased.
The players' union doesn't believe him to be representing them in any kind of negotiations.
Now, the players' union is often in an opposition to the commissioner's office.
Right.
There
was a case regarding McBride and Sons. I recall whether it was the Court of Appeals or Supreme Court, in which if you had a dispute regarding the construction of your house, the arbitration would be led by the president of McBride and Sons. I think we decided that was not appropriate. You found that case in your research.
And that's the Vincent case, Judge. The Vincent case. And that case is, you know, the court didn't simply decide that the president of the company couldn't be the arbitrator or couldn't select the arbitrator, was the exact issue in that case. The court went farther. And it said, even if the president of the association wasn't the president of the defendant, he was still in a position of bias. And the reason he's in a position of bias is because it's his job to protect the members of the trade association.
And that was before the award, wasn't it?
Absolutely pre-award.
Now, I assume that the commissioner serving as an arbitrator is probably common in a lot of these types of contracts. Is your position, in essence, upsetting the apple cart nationwide and how the selection of who the arbiter can never be the commissioner of the sport involved?
I wouldn't say go that far at all, Judge. It really depends on who the plaintiff is and whether you're talking about ordinary, run-of-the-mill, average Joe employee like Mr. Hewitt, just the equipment manager for the Rams, versus you're talking about the NFL Players Association, a very sophisticated organization that can take care of themselves and can engage in give-and-take negotiations with the owners. Mr. Hewitt can't engage in giving.
Have we ever drawn that distinction in deciding who can be a fair arbiter or not?
Well, it goes to the unconscionability. The unconscionability analysis takes that into account.
Yeah, but that's a different issue than this issue of disqualification automatically as the commissioner.
And I'm saying that was my point, that you can't disqualify. I'm not saying you can disqualify the commissioner in every single case, because you could have a case where a head executive, a top executive and there was such a case, a top executive of a football team agrees to have the commissioner arbitrate his disputes. You know, that person has bargaining power and can negotiate. That's fine. Arguably fine, anyway. Maybe football players.
How should we be affected by the fact that this is the same contract that he signed, basically, for the last 20 years or more than that?
Well, actually, the evidence doesn't quite show that, Judge.
Okay.
I mean, he did sign this most recent one, and he probably did sign other contracts with an arbitration provision. Record doesn't show that he signed every single one had an arbitration provision. But even if it did, Judge, I still don't think it makes any difference because, unexpected surprise is an element of unconscionability analysis. But if the contract is oppressive and unfair, it doesn't matter whether you're surprised by it or not. And realistically, we have to be realistic about how these contracts are made. Not with the union, but I'm talking about the regular employees, because it requires some pretty heroic assumptions to assume that an employee, when they're hired or they're rehired, sits there and reads their contract, reads an arbitration clause, and makes an informed decision about it. They don't, because they don't expect that their employer is someday going to discriminate against them because of their age, and that they'll ever have to sue.
Doesn't both the FAA and Missouri statutes specifically provide that the remedy, if the arbitrator shows impartiality, is done afterwards? I mean, I understand your argument that, well, somebody who's biased could hide their bias during the proceedings, but when both the federal law and the state law provide that the remedy you're asking us to approve is to be done after the award, how are we to?
Well, the short answer to that, Judge, is that there's no per se rule in that regard. You're right that judges are reluctant to interfere in arbitration proceedings, but that's not a per se categorical rule, and we know that from the
Let me ask it another way. Maybe there's some statutes either in the FAA or in state law that provide statutorily for the remedy that you're requesting.
Well, it's implicit in the Missouri MUAA and the Federal Arbitration Act because you have a provision in both those statutes, Judge, that specifically say you can raise any generally applicable contract defenses to an arbitration agreement. One of those generally applicable contract defenses is unconscionability. Mm-hmm. And unconscionability can apply to who you select as the arbitrator. In fact, in State X Rel Benson versus Schneider, this court allowed a pre-award challenge to an arbitration agreement because it selected an arbitrator who was clearly biased.
There were several things wrong with that contract that aren't wrong with this one. But you would agree that that unconscionability has to be decided at the time the contract's entered into, right? A contract doesn't become unconscionable later. It has to be, for your purposes, unconscionable at the outset.
Well, I would agree that's normally the focus on at formation time, although the court in Brewer did say sometimes it may not become evident till later, and that you can still analyze it that way. But in this case, we're talking about an arbitrator in the agreement itself. He's designated in the agreement himself, and he's a person who's paid by the owners. He's a person who's hired by the owners. He's a person who can be fired by the owners. And he's a person who's charged with protecting the interests of the owners, not the employees. Such a person cannot sit in judgment in a fair and impartial way.
But I understand you're saying you're not trying to say he, per se, the commissioner can't be fair and biased. You're saying in the context of in the whole context of this case, so there's other factors you suggested, unequal bargaining power.
That's part
of it. Are there
other
things that you'd put together with it to show why you think here that's not the case, even if in other cases?
Right. You know, it's not a per se rule. You look at the particular facts. You're looking at an employee who signed a contract in less than a minute, you know, without any analysis, negotiation, anything like that. So you have to consider that. Then you have to consider the ties and connection, biasing ties and connection between the commissioner and.
Because if he didn't sign the arbitration agreement, he wouldn't have a job.
Absolutely. He was told that. You know, you've got to sign this contract, which contains the arbitration
agreement. But suggesting he had a minute when he's done it numerous times over the years, signed one, which would have the commissioner, seems a little bit with facts.
I'm not saying he didn't mean it, Judge. He signed the contract. But the whole idea of the unconscionability doctrine is you override the agreement of the parties.
Right, but you were suggesting that he only had a minute to consider it, and if this were the first time he'd signed such a contract and he only had a minute, that's different than if he had a minute 20 years in a row.
Well, no, that's what he said. He said he signed all the contracts that way. You go up to the office, say, here's a contract, sign it, lessen it, go back down. He said it for all the contracts.
And it says over a signature, I'm sure, I've read everything included in this contract that I signed.
Actually, I don't think that's in there, but it certainly could have been.
Thank you, counsel. You'll have 3 minutes on rebuttal.
Could you start with addressing why there is, under Missouri law, a valid contract to arbitrate?
Happy to. If I could introduce myself first, Justice.
Certainly.
Brad Winters, on behalf of the Rams defendants. There is a valid contract because all the elements of contract are met, most particularly, and I think what Your Honor may be focused on, because it was focused on in the brief of the realtor, was the lack of consideration or the consideration of mutuality.
I'm talking about the essential terms to arbitrate. The agreement merely says it is referred to the commission for decision after due notice and hearing,
yes,
at which both parties are present.
Correct. The provision, which is in the appendix and in everyone's materials, does say that all disputes between the parties, so it's a bilateral obligation upon the Rams, which distinguishes our case, of course, from the Clemens and the Sneezik case that were decided concerning the Kansas City Chiefs.
Well, I know you're arguing that the guidelines for arbitration somehow have become part of the contract through reference to them being bound by the rules and regulations. Your opponent argues that they are not part of the rules and regulations. There is no express incorporation of them. The agreement doesn't even use the word arbitration. So tell us why not having, or why you disagree that they're not part of it, or why not having anything other than a hearing at which people can be present and notice is sufficient to be a binding arbitration agreement.
What the agreement says, Your Honor, as the court pointed out, it does not say the word arbitration, but it does say that all disputes between the parties shall be submitted by both sides, in this case, to the commissioner of the National Football League to be decided and
referred to him to be decided.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Now, in addition, the undertaking in the contract by the employee was to abide by all the rules and regulations of the National Football League, which includes the arbitration rules, which are part of the rules and regulations of the National Football League. And what distinguishes this case from the Sneezik and Clemens, then the concerns that the court expressed there is this, that in Sneezik and Clemens, of course, the Chiefs never signed the agreement.
So you think that they are designated rules of arbitration as opposed to simply guidelines?
They are the rules and guidelines by which the commissioner or his designee will handle all matters presented for resolution by the parties.
Are guidelines binding? Are they rules if they're just guidelines? Or can you ignore them? I think that's the question.
Well, everyone, we're obliged to follow them, and they have contractually undertaken to follow them.
So even though it says guidelines, you have to follow them?
Yes.
Okay. That's just the name? Because guidelines can be, you know, just for your information.
Understood. And I think Your Honor points out from the Whitworth case, which is discussed in both the briefs, concerns that the court had there. But, of course, those rules were expressly stated that they were not contractual, were not binding, were not presented.
In the handbook, right.
Right. And if I can get back to the point I was making, which distinguishes this case from and the concerns expressed by the court in the Sneezik and Clemens situation, is that we're bound by the NFL rules and guidelines. The plaintiff has contractually undertaken. What happened in Sneezik and Clemens was this threshold issue in that the plaintiffs or the employees in Sneezik and Clemens said, we will arbitrate. The Chiefs didn't. And what the Chiefs said was, well, the rules require us to arbitrate. Well, that's good enough. But what the court said was that, but that rule can change. And if that rule can changes, then we have no mutuality anymore because the plaintiff employee in Sneezik and Clemens for the Chiefs promised contractually to arbitrate, and you did not. But here we don't have that issue. Both parties have said, we will submit all disputes to the same person or his designee under the same set of rules, the same set of guidelines, a bilateral promise. And if the rules or guidelines change, they affect us both.
Your opponent is arguing that there was no agreement on his part to do that. So refer me to the actual part of the contract that you think he has expressly agreed to this.
Well, There's two parts, Your Honor. The first is the agreement. I think it's paragraph 6 or 7.
Right. I've got that in front.
Yeah, which says we will submit. And it says what it says, Your Honor. Admittedly, the word arbitration does not appear in there, but it does say what it says, which is we will agree to submit disputes between us to the commissioner for determination.
And it refers to, it doesn't actually refer to those guidelines for arbitration. I think you have to go to what it sends you to, and then that in turn sends you to the guidelines for arbitration.
Correct.
Is that right? Are there cases saying that's okay to have the double reference, or is that a problem for you because it doesn't specifically mention what rule, like doesn't say it's going to be governed by the American Arbitration Association rules, which is often in a contract, you know, to arbitrate. Does it have to be there, or can it be in an appendage or an attachment? How?
Well, a couple of things, Your Honor. First, I've done a lot of contracts, litigated a lot of contracts with arbitration provision. I've never seen anyone provided with the AAA rules. It says it'll be guided by the AAA rules at the time in force. So a reference to the rule is sufficient. But we cited a number of cases in our brief, including the Grant case with the Philadelphia Eagles, where much less was presented. And the Hojanowski case also, a federal case out of with the Buffalo Bills involved, where much less was, sorry.
But my question is, your opponent is arguing there is no reference in the rules to these guidelines. So I'm asking you expressly, what is in the contract that you are relying on?
It is the undertaking in the contract by the employee to follow the rules, regulations, guidelines of the National Football League.
And again, what in those rules, regulations, because it doesn't use the word guidelines, does it? It says rules and regulations.
I don't actually have the contract right up here with me at this moment.
We're talking about the first sentence of paragraph 7.
Say it again?
The first sentence of paragraph 7 that says that Hewitt agrees to be bound by the Constitution, bylaws, rules, and regulations of the NFL, and by the decisions of the commission. So are these arbitration rules and guidelines in the Constitution, bylaws, rules, and regulations of the NFL?
We say they are, Your Honor.
And is that,
are they?
Is that disputed?
I suppose the plaintiff will say, as he has, that he did not know he was subject to all of the constitutional provisions, all the rules, all the regulations of the National Football League, but he undertook to follow them.
But if he undertook to follow the rules and regs, is there any question that one of the whether he knew it or not, is there a question of fact as to whether the National Football League dispute resolution procedure guidelines are one of the rules and regulations? And is that addressed anyplace? Do we have a copy of the rules and regulations that shows that's a part of it? I know we have these guidelines. Does something show that's a rule or regulation of the NFL?
I don't know that there's a document that says it is a rule or a regulation
words. I'm looking at the copy that he attached of the guidelines, and mm-hmm. you refer to it as rules and guidelines. What's at Appendix A is called National Football League Dispute Resolution Procedural Guidelines. It doesn't say rules and guidelines. So my question to you specifically is there another document that indicates it is a rule? Or
no.
Is there some reference in the rules that were adopted to these guidelines?
Well, there's reference in the rules to the commissioner's authority to conduct arbitrations, and to set the rules and regulations for them.
And where is that?
I will advise the court at the break, but I don't have it up here.
Does he get a copy? Does the plaintiff get a copy of any of these rules and regulations when he signs the contract?
I don't believe he did.
Does he know where to get the? Does he know where to access these rules and regulations?
Are
they readily accessible to him?
They are accessible. They are online. Whether he did or not, or whether he knew that or not, I can't speak to that because, as several of the questions that have just been raised point out, there's factual issues here which need to be resolved. And I guess that takes us back, Your Honors, to the issue of whether or not this is appropriate by writ, whether mandamus or prohibition, whether the rights here are so clearly defined and so clearly set forward that the court must intervene to halt this arbitration based upon the several grounds which have been asserted, including most troublingly unconscionability, which is a term that's been tossed around in cases, quite candidly misused in a number of cases. The standard that's been established through Concepcion, Brewer, and others sets a very high bar. And what we have here procedurally is this, that we had a contract where the parties agreed to submit their disputes to a agreed person. And that
but in Brewer, and Brewer too, in Brewer too, the which the Supreme Court did not take cert on, found that the bar was reached indeed, and it was went back to the trial court.
I'm sorry, I missed the last thing you said.
In Brewer two,
yes,
in
sir.
Brewer two, which the Supreme Court did not take cert on, it was decided that there was enough alleged it's unconscionability to send it back to the trial court.
Sure. And I guess the point there, as Your Honor distilled from both the principal opinion, the majority opinion, as well as Justice Thomas's concurrence, is that there's two things going on that set out, that Concepcion made very clear. One, we can't have a per se rule knocking out all classes of matters or all or per se rule as to arbitrations. And this gets back to the Chief Justice's question, I believe, earlier, or maybe Justice Fisher, that that as the Court of Appeals ruled, based on literally no record, and in fact a mistaken belief that the plaintiff, Mr. Hewitt, had never seen this provision before it was thrust into his hands. It was thrust into his hands, as the trial judge found expressly in her order, more than a dozen times over a 40-year career, the same contract. This wasn't in dispute, and she so found that he knew that this contract included the commissioner as the arbitrator over and over and over again. Whether or not he had access to the rules, Your Honor, he certainly had the contract. And so the question that you asked, Justice Fisher, the answer is yes, that based upon this broad stroke, the commissioner of the National Football League, the commissioner of the National Hockey League, of the NBA, of Major Indoor Soccer League, all these folks have been without any showing of actual prejudice. In fact, the word potential appears several times in the writ issued by the Court of Appeals.
Do you have any information as far as how many times the commissioner is found in favor of the employee?
I do not. Okay. I don't. But as nor do I believe that if it was a dramatic number, we would have not have heard about it.
Are you aware of any precedents that says that the commissioner of any one of these sports is presumed to be prejudicial and is not appropriate as an arbiter?
No, there's language, and in fact, it was cited in one of the cases. I think it was the Fred Wire case cited by the plaintiff, where there was a reference to the NFL commissioner, but the case was ultimately sent to arbitration. But that takes us back, I think, to the Vincent case, which is, I think, of interest to the court, because in Vincent we had the McBride-Holmes situation, and there the court did find, in a pre-Concepcion, pre-Brewer II environment, that the president of the Home Builders Association was not an appropriate person to be designating an arbitration. Well, Vincent is different in several important respects, the temporal one being the principal respect, which is its pre-Concepcion and pre-Brewer, but more importantly, it was a consumer agreement. And secondly, I take exception to what was said to you by a Realtors Council from this rostrum a few minutes ago. The National Football League is not a trade association. The Home Builders Association is and was. And to have a trade association, trade association's president, who happened to be the president of the defendant in that case, whether he was disqualified himself or recused himself or not, to have that person designated is much more troubling and much more problematic than what we have here, where we have we have employees of the National Football League committing to, with the teams, to submit disputes to the commissioner for decision. And if recent events have taught us nothing, it's that the commissioner of a major sports league is perfectly capable of protecting the integrity of the league against discrimination charges to the detriment of any individual member. But more importantly, recent events have shown us that it's not unreasonable for parties, including team employees and teams, to believe he is capable of that, and to ask that person, whether male or female, NHL, NCAA, whatever, to be the decider of disputes, as this has happened here over the better part of, if I may finish?
Yeah, and I have another question, though, if I may interrupt.
Sure.
So please answer your opponent's argument about the distinction between an employee at a minor level, like his client, as opposed to a dispute with the player, who's got the benefit of the players' organization, the players' union, to have a more sophisticated representation. Discuss the distinction that he's made.
Well,
you may go answer. Take your time.
The distinction, first, was one that the Court of Appeals, when they issued the writ originally, wasn't interested in. Because if the Court of Appeals opinion basically said, because of your name and the potential for bias, we rule you out. So what we have is, on a totally immature, unsettled, non-record, the Court of Appeals was willing to make a broad, in violation of Concepcion and Brewer II, statement about commissioners generally. But the point you have made, Chief Justice, is the right one, which is we need a record. And that's why the statute is set up the way the statute is set up, so that if there is manifest bias, and frankly, if they lose, which is why if you move to compel arbitration and you prevail, it's not appealable by them, which is what happened here, because you've got to go through the arbitration by statute. That's what the legislature tells us. And if you lose, then you can appeal. You may not. You could avoid an appeal. But that's my point is, there is no record here other than what was presented to the trial judge, who found expressly that these are the rules he agreed to arbitrate.
So if he lost before the commissioner, he could appeal the case to where?
To the Court of Appeals.
Circuit Court.
Circuit Court, and then to the Court of Appeals. Yeah, unappealable doesn't mean you don't have.
But you don't get to re-decide the factual issues. You make sure the rules are followed. There was an unbiased arbiter, and there's certain set out grounds that the circuit court can look at, right?
Well, and yes, and that's incredibly important here, because when parties to arbitration agreements who have given up their constitutionally protected right to a jury trial and their right to a full and complete appeal enter into an agreement, Supreme Court cases going back and up to and including Concepcion say that the principal and cardinal purpose is to give the parties the arbitration, give them the benefit of their bargain, give them the arbitration that they bargained for, because they've given up so much, and that's what we've...
But the argument and the questions that Chief Justice was asking is, did they bargain for it? I mean, opposing counsel say Brewer did look individually. It didn't say automatically class action arbitration is bad. It looked individually, that in this particular case, it was unconscionable. And that's what opposing counsel says we need to do here before it goes to arbitration if we find it was not unconscionable. Why is that not the case?
Well, for one reason, Your Honor, it was presented, this was argued to the trial judge. And the order that Judge Kerr, who's the respondent here, entered, made factual findings on that very issue, including the one that Mr. Lynn attempted to make an issue of here. And that is that dozens of times he signed this contract over 40 years. And the Judge Kerr found that he understood this and that the rules and regulations were indeed presented.
Well, she didn't find he understood it, but she said if he did it, this contract are substantially similar ones for 40 years, and if he chose not to read it and inquire about its terms or ask for supporting documents, that was his choice.
Constructive, then. Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor.
Counsel, your time has expired. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel, at the time this contract was signed, is there no conceivable set of circumstances that could have been imagined then under which the commissioner would have given a fair answer to a dispute involving your client?
I think if you're talking about an equipment manager or that level of an employee, and they agreed to have someone arbitrate the case who was a paid employee of the defendant, I can't envision any under circumstances in that situation where that could be conscionable.
So there's no, I mean, you're you're asking us to not give the commissioner a chance to demonstrate that he can be unbiased.
Could he be unbiased?
Yes.
In a real world, in a theoretical sense?
No, in this case, can he be unbiased?
You know, anything's possible, Judge. Suppose, you know, this arbitration could have designated the owner of the Rams, and he would have signed it, right? It didn't designate the owner of the Rams, but it designated somebody who is a representative of the Rams and the other teams. The commissioner, as a matter of public record, is paid $35 million a year. And guess who pays him that money? It's not people like Mr. Hewitt, the equipment manager. It's the owners. It's the Rams. He is a paid employee of a party, and I don't think that's
not.
And he's bound to represent the owners.
Absolutely.
By that Article 2 you mentioned,
by
he's bound to represent
the
owners.
By virtue of the Constitution, he is not supposed to be representing employees. He is management. And this is an employee. You can't have a member of management sitting in judgment on a claim by an employee against a member of management. You simply can't. And
but as Judge Russell asked you then, that concept or that argument you make applies to players as well as rank and file employees.
Not necessarily. Because players, even though individually they may not be the most sophisticated people in the world, some of them are.
If you're biased, you're biased. You're not biased, but it's okay to be biased if somebody's strong. Either you're biased and you're unqualified, or you're not biased.
It goes back to the question of bargaining power, Judge.
It doesn't make you not biased if somebody else has bargaining power. You're saying it's unconscionable, and one thing you look at is their relative positions, or are you saying inherently being commissioner means you're biased in favor of the owners? If so, then nobody should have to arbitrate.
I don't know if that necessarily follows. If you look at the cases we cite where the commissioner has been disqualified, in fact, they did involve players. So I'm not suggesting that players necessarily couldn't bring such a claim. The two cases we cite, the Dreyer case, the California case, and the Morris case. But if you're talking about, let's say, the players' union, okay, they may allow the commissioner to make certain decisions, apparently like this discipline decisions. They don't allow the commissioner to make other kinds of decisions. But the union can get concessions from the owners on other points.
We understand collective bargaining, but the point is, if he's biased inherently, then he's biased. You cannot have a biased arbitrator.
I don't think you can have a biased arbitrator who's a paid representative of the owners, Judge.
Okay.
And if you were to say that, it would contradict State X Rel versus Vincent.
Thank you, counsel. Thank